And I think what was really interesting is there is a sense, and I felt this very strongly in the conference, there is a sense that space is finally investable, right?
Hey, space watchers. This is Space Cafe Radio, your channel about trends, great people, and awesome conferences. I'm Thorsten, publisher of Spacewatch.global. You just heard Peggy Hollinger, international business editor for the Financial Times, space fan, and one of the moderators of the FT Live Invest in Space event on 8th and 9th of May 2022 in London. A week after this outstanding conference, I had the absolute privilege talking with her about the market, her view in space, and the role of media talking about space. Listen to our conversation. I'm very happy to have this interview with you, Peggy. It's a great honor. What makes space so interesting to organize an own conference for that?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to the Space Cafe chat. I really appreciate it. And it's my honor to be here. Space is a fascinating sector. In the Financial Times, our job is to follow the money. Our job is to look at the development of new businesses, new sectors, new economies. And the space economy, you can see over the last decade, has really radically changed. And a lot of money is going into this sector. I think last year, the amount of investment that went into space startups doubled. Actually, it hit a new record. It had already hit a record, but I think it went up to about $15 billion. So clearly, it's becoming a very important sector, an economy in its own right, and it's something that the FT should be covering. So why the conference? Because we can see lots of people want to learn about the space sector. They want to understand what's going on. They want to understand what are the principles that are driving the growth of the sector. One of the things we heard again and again and again over the conference was, you know, the long cycle, life cycle of the space sector and of investment in space companies, that they're very long cycle. And that's something that a lot of investors, a lot of bankers, a lot of people don't really understand. It's trying to enhance that understanding for our readers so that they're better able to invest and to participate.
You made a great job in moderating and guiding through this conference over these 2 days, and it was really a pleasure to be there in person and to follow it. Can you summarize what was your goal, the goal of FT, of course, with that conference?
Well, personally, on a personal basis, it was something I was very keen we should do. As I say, you can see that a lot of money is going into this sector. There will be successes, there will be failures. From a personal perspective, I saw it as a wonderful opportunity to meet lots of people from different parts of the value chain, also from the investment community, and to enhance my knowledge. I mean, you have this group of people who are super smart, who are doing really interesting things. So from a personal perspective, I learned loads in that day and a half. I think also, again, as I said earlier, it is partly, you know, what is the FT? The FT is a tool for our readers and our subscribers. We are a tool. We are there to give you useful information, information that you can use in your work or in your life, your investment. And so from that perspective, the conference is a really important service to our readers, bringing together. The Financial Times has the power to bring together lots of institutions, individuals that, you know, you might not be able to bring together otherwise. We can bring together the investment community. We can bring together institutions like NASA and the European Space Agency. And the European Space Agency was just fantastic for us. I mean, we couldn't have done it without the help from the European Space Agency. I want to absolutely stress that. First of all, they gave us the privilege of having a live interview with an astronaut on the International Space Station.
I mean, how cool was that?
Absolutely. How cool was that? I mean, really, that's got to be my career highlight. And the fact that ESA helped us with that and helped us with thinking through a lot of the subjects, as well as our sponsors, obviously. It's a hugely privileged position to be in, to be trusted by these institutions to be able to interview an astronaut live on the International Space Station. Fantastic privilege. So we have a responsibility to that privilege. We have a responsibility to try and be as informative and bring as many people together so that the sum total of what comes out is bigger than what goes in, if you know what I mean, that people come out and feel like they've really enhanced their own knowledge of the sector and are better able to do their jobs.
I absolutely can second what you just said, that learning a lot from people on stage. When we started our Space Cafe series over 2 years ago, it is for me such an honor to talk with all these bright-minded people in the sector and learn their perspective. And as you said, learning every time I'm speaking to them, also to you. I was about to ask your highlight, and I think you mentioned it already, but what else? What struck you? What touched you most?
I'll stress the interview with Samantha Cristoforetti was fantastic, and she was amazing. I mean, she's at once incredibly smart, incredibly thoughtful, and very human. Let's not forget that these are humans who are up there. She's a mother of a young child, and she's up there in space. And I loved the fact that she was able to speak both on a very personal level, but also, you know, very big geopolitical issues, the tensions with Russia and how she collaborates with her cosmonaut colleagues up there on the international. It can't be easy. So yes, that was very much a highlight to try and it was a window into how geopolitics plays out in real life, but also the scientific experience, the experiments she talked about. I mean, elsewhere, I think for me, there were so many highlights, and I'm not going to pick out an individual company, but I think, you know, the very important discussions were the discussions about international regulation and how do we get over that. It was very interesting in the panel with the UN Office for Outer Space Affairs and with Joanna Wheeler to talk to them about practically in the apps, given the time that it takes for us to regulate space or to agree new standards or benchmarks, how should we start thinking about how we implement some of the licensing procedures or the insurance and financial procedures in order to ensure that we use space sustainably? So for me, that was a very, very important one. I also think the geopolitics of space was fascinating. You know, we had both Axiom and OneWeb there talking about, and OneWeb, as we all know, was one of the first space victims of the tensions between Russia and the West when Roscosmos refused to fly the OneWeb satellites. So actually hearing people's firsthand experiences from that, but also understanding the tensions between the UK and the European Union and how that impacts on ESO, which is not part of the European Union, to get that clarification from the science minister in the UK, George Freeman, and talking to Josef Aschbacher. You can see that they're both trying very hard to work around those tensions so that it doesn't disrupt the relationship between ESA and the UK, which it shouldn't. So it was very reassuring to hear George Freeman say, in fact, if anything, the tensions over the Northern Ireland Protocol, which have blocked UK's participation in Horizon Copernicus, if anything, that strengthened the UK's resolve to be even more committed to ESA, which was a very important message, I think, both for ESA and for the UK space sector. So there were lots of, and there were lots more. To be honest, there were so many, I'm overwhelmed with them.
Absolutely. Sounds great to me. The geopolitical tension on the ISS is a big issue. They said this morning in our news program that astronauts had to go into an escape mode because there was a close proximity with a part from the recent Russian Assad test. So it's real. These things are real, but as these teams are still have to work together. And I think talking with a number of astronauts that I had the pleasure with, they all repeat the same. We are there up in space and we have to rely on each other, regardless of the nationality we are. And I think that's a good symbol. And we just can hope that it will stay for a while.
I agree with you completely. And just before the space conference, we did a very big interactive visual graphic about the question of space debris. And in my reporting for that, I had the privilege of speaking to Matthias Maurer, who just came down from the space station on the 6th of May. But he was in the space station when the Russians blew up Cosmos 1408. And he was one of those astronauts that had to go into the escape capsule. And he described those moments when that happened. And he described they hadn't been told exactly what happened. They weren't quite sure. They didn't know where the debris was coming from. And it took many hours for them to actually realize when they get the internet in space, which sort of makes me laugh, but of course they have to. But he started seeing some of the news reports that it was a Russian anti-satellite test. And he said the cosmonauts that were with him, he said, I think his exact quote was something, they looked at me with big eyes. They hadn't realized that this had happened. They hadn't been told. And I think he said, you know, they weren't very happy about it. So again, it's that sense of we're all humans together. Again, that's what I love about this, like the ambition for space is that it both reveals the ingenuity of human beings, but also the very humanity of human beings. The idea of living and working in space and being well above those geopolitical tensions that we have down here on Earth. And it would be a tragedy if what happens here begins to affect what we do up there.
That's right. Let's come back to the topic of your conference. That was our investment in space. So how willing is Europe to invest in space at large? We had Seraphim there, we had Lakestar, we had Alpine, and so on. We had a few of the space investment giants, if we can use that word, and not compare it to the US. But how willing is Europe to invest in space?
I think it's a big ambition, isn't it? It's a very big ambition of the European Space Agency's Agenda 2025 to sort of kickstart that investment and to really build some of the infrastructure for investment that the United States has had for a very long time, but Europe has rather struggled with. And I think what was really interesting is there is a sense, and I felt this very strongly in the conference, there is a sense that space is finally investable, right? We had a lot of SPACs last year, and clearly there's going to be some that fail. And that's one of the big concerns. People are beginning, a broader group of investors beginning to think that it's possible to invest in space ventures. So that was very encouraging. Now, the big question is what the global economy looks like over the next 12, 18 months, 2 years, and what that might mean for the space sector. And if you see lots of SPACs, if you see lots of space SPACs fail, collapse, whatever, or if you start seeing some high-profile ventures collapse, you know, what damage will that do to sentiment about the space sector? So it's still a bit fragile. But Europe itself, you can see, is very ambitious. And the big question for Europe, and I'm not sure we have the answer to that, is that the structure of Europe being so very different from the United States. So, for example, when it comes to a launcher, we have Arianespace. The United States opened up to the private sector and happened to have a billionaire, Musk, and another one, Bezos, who were willing to invest lots of money up front, yes, with government contracts, yes, with NASA contracts. There's no way they could succeed without those contracts. I suppose my question is, to what extent is Europe willing to start moving contracts away from Arianespace towards the private sector? And in order to generate that kind of competition, there are lots of incumbents in Europe that have lots of individual national backing. And the question really is, how free are we to move beyond those and to move beyond our borders and start saying, well, okay, we just need to open up properly to competition. And the second thing I slightly worry about, just talking to lots of folk, is we have so many launchers, and I know that Europe is investing a lot in other launchers. We can't recreate SpaceX. I sort of feel that moment is gone, and we should be thinking about the applications of space and how you use it, or we should be thinking about living and working in space, the areas that aren't yet sort of already dominated. I think the jury is still out. Europe has a huge amount of potential. We've got incredibly vibrant companies and startups and super smart people here, and that was emphasized in the conference, the folk we had there. But it's to what extent the nation states can overcome their individual interests and start saying for Europe as a whole, you know, we can't have 27 launcher companies. We can't have 27, you know, I don't know, space stations or whatever. And it's really to what extent Europe is going to be willing to support a European-wide solution to some of these areas. I think the jury's out. But you're right. We had Bessemer. We had all these big space investors. And I think that's encouraging. I think the Americans are looking at the United States and then they're looking at Europe and they're seeing a huge amount of potential. It was very striking again at the conference that there were so many American funds that were coming over to attend because they want to know what's out there. They want to put their money in Europe. And again, that's got to be encouraging.
That's right. Space comes with complex challenges, as we know. You alluded to a few of them. They are legal, they're financially technical, they're also societal. How do you address them already in the FT? How are you planning to address? You refer to this wonderful interactive article you published before the conference. And it was really a pleasure to read that. Really, with all respect,
thank
that
you.
Was great, great work. What can we expect from FT in that field?
Well, I think, again, it's still a relatively small sector, you know, compared to the financial services sector, for example. I think you can see more coverage, but we're never going to be space.com. We're never going to be, you know, we pick and choose our stories that we think are important. And that Space Debris, the visual team, I pitched that to the visual team back in November after the Russian anti-satellite test. I kind of said, look, we need to do something on this. The visual guys just did an amazing job at presenting it visually. And then, of course, there was a lot of reporting around it. I don't think you're going to see that sort of thing often, because it takes so much effort to do, and you don't want to dilute the impact, and it has to be absolutely the right subject for that sort of visual treatment. But you will see a lot more reporting and editorial coverage. So I write a column a few times a month, and I often write about space. And quite often I'll write about the things that maybe we haven't covered from a news perspective, because they're really interesting, and I think the FT should be covering them. So I use my column as that particular forum. You know, I hope to write about the sort of commercial space stations, because a big question is, you know, what happens post the ISS? And how are we going to use space commercially? That's what really interests me. How are we going to use it commercially? How are other countries, how is Europe learning from NASA's commercial policy and what it does for NASA? And how are we seeing that? We have the opportunity to see that from the very start here in Europe, and watch where the money goes and see what succeeds and what doesn't. I think you'll see that, but we'll pick and choose our stories.
Our team was just fascinated by the quality and the visualization, and came back to me and said, hey, we want it as well for our articles, for our series. I said, maybe we don't have the resources at the moment, but we're working on that. However, let's talk about the role of media in the space market, in the space sector. How do you see the changing role of media to inform, to entertain, to edutain, to choose what works for you?
Well, I think one of the things that makes me despair a little bit about the media is the media gets very excited about space tourism, and the media is not very good at thinking about the space economy, which is why I think there's an opportunity for us. But it gets carried away with the headlines of billionaires and traveling to space and joyrides into space. And I can understand in part because everyone likes to imagine that maybe one day, just as I book a flight to Paris, I could book a flight, you know, beyond the atmosphere. But in truth, that's going to be a very tiny part of the global space economy. And what you're seeing happening in space is, you know, rivalry between nations. Everyone wants to stake a claim to a part of low Earth orbit, because we can see now you can potentially generate a lot of money from there. You can use it for lots of things. So what does this all mean in terms of who gets there first, who owns what? What can we exploit out of space? Who owns the resources? And this is all absolutely fascinating. So I don't think enough people are focused on that. They're focused on the headline grabbing, you know, Bezos versus Musk, who's going to get up there first, Branson as well. And it misses the point, frankly. I don't know what the space sector can do about that. I think we need to see some real successes, and it's still a bit risky. And when I get companies coming to me, oh, I'm doing this wonderful thing, I'm always very wary, because I think idea whether what you're telling me is total nonsense or whether it is something that's absolutely viable. I'm no expert. I think there's still a period of people need to be educated. People need to understand what's going on in space. I do think that the sector could do a better job about arguing more vocally for better regulation in space. And for space debris, argument is beginning to be heard now. But the whole question of intellectual property and the rules of launch and the rules of operation, that's a little bit complex. So the media hasn't really grabbed that. But if they don't, the consequences of not getting the politicians to finally sit around a table and have a conversation about it could be quite dire for the success of a space economy.
Thank you very much for your time. It was an absolute pleasure talking with you, Peggy.
Thank you, Torsten. It was my pleasure.
If you want to stay on the pulse of space, visit our website, our mothership, at spacewatch.global, and subscribe to our newsletters. But of course, don't forget to become a Space Watcher. I'm Torsten Kreening, CEO and publisher of spacewatch.global, your independent perspective of space.